Tell me about Paul. Tell me about your husband.
Oh, do you know what? When I was talking to Kaz before last week and she was saying, do you mind talking about Paul? I just said, it is always wonderful to have the opportunity to talk about him. So, yeah, we were married for 12 years, which, you know, was wonderful. And suddenly we were faced with this sort of rocket that came into our lives, which was a brain tumour.
What was he like? We'll talk about the brain tumour in a moment. Yeah. I'd like to know what Paul was like as a man.
Okay. Oh, bless you.
Well, just your husband, married for 12 years.
Yeah, okay.
How did you meet?
Oh,
keep it clean, obviously. Yeah.
Okay. okay, so really, really, really how we met was I followed him around the campus at uni because I quite fancied him. And he was a footballer.
Right.
Played for Bristol Rovers, yeah. Reserves, and for universities across England. And, liked his legs.
And you managed to catch his eye.
Followed him around the libraries, pretending to study. That was really, okay. You asked me the truth.
No, but you see, but this is important. The reason I do this is anybody who's suffered the loss of someone they love.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to remember why you love them.
Yeah, no, that's really true.
And why they still matter. To this very day, yeah, they still matter.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you have yeah, this yeah. wonderful
Stalked
memory.
Stalked him, I think, is probably what my friends would say.
Those are words that you may choose to use. I would say, put yourself so you could be noticed by him. Yeah. And you got married.
Yeah.
And clearly a fit man, a healthy man.
Really
a sportsman.
Really healthy, yes. Sporty, golf, cricket. You know, I'm not at all sporty. Hmm. So I think it was just him as a person that attracted me. And he was a lovely, committed Christian. And that attracted me as well.
I see you're wearing your cross quite openly there.
Yes,
so that's your faith is important
faith
to you. And to
very
him,
important
too.
To me, and it was very, very important to him.
Okay. So you finally bag your man.
Yeah, certainly did.
12 happy years. When did something start to not be right?
When he came home from work mm-hmm. and said, I just don't feel right, got a really bad, bad headache. But I think prior to that, he had had vision problems. So when we were watching the telly, he would sort of be like, oh, I can't see it. Can't sort of see it properly. But okay. At the time, didn't really think anything of it. And then a couple of months later, came back from work. He's a chartered accountant by profession, worked in Bristol, and never had a day off sick. And he came home early and said he had a bad headache.
So this was out of character for Paul.
Totally out of character.
How long from that, coming home, never having had a day off sick, sporty, golf, all those very, you know, quite active yeah. lifestyle, very active man by the sound of it.
Yeah, yeah.
How long did it take to hear those two dreadful words, brain tumour?
3 months.
3 months.
Mm.
And do you remember what it was like when you heard those words?
I do, very, very clearly, because we were in the hospital. He'd been taken in as an emergency. We were
so
in
something
the hospital.
Had happened then? Something had happened?
The doctor came round and we just knew he was unwell, but we didn't know what it was. Yeah. And he had an MRI scan. And then suddenly I was brought china cups from the nurses. Mm-hmm. And when you get a china cup in hospital, that's when you know it's not good news. And the consultant came round and said he has a mass on his brain. And I just said, oh, okay. I had no idea what that was at all. And call me ignorant, but that's part of my passion now is wanting to tell people what that is. I had no idea what a brain tumour was. They didn't use the words brain tumour. They said mass on his brain. And I said, oh, well, if you could get him sorted, that'd be great. I said, because we're going to church camp on Saturday. And this was on the Monday. I just thought
that
it
tells
was
you, that tells you a great deal about you. It tells you a great deal about the knowledge. And, of course, you know, you would quickly become, as the dialogue would be from an episode of The Late Great Holby City or Casualty, you begin to absorb all this medical language.
Yeah.
But a mass on the brain, you would think perhaps, well, cut it out and we'll be home in time for...
Great.
Yeah, home in time for tea. Yeah, exactly.
Sorted.
Yeah,
but totally had no idea. And then we went to an emergency situation where his body just shut down and clearly in front of my very own eyes, that's when it all just, I think, went wrong. So the pressure of the tumour in his head just exploded effectively, and your body just shuts down. So then,
because he couldn't cope.
Because he, yeah. So it, although it took 3 months to build up to that, he obviously, the tumour was there, but we just didn't know what it was. It was very quick at the end, as in the diagnosis, because he was then rushed, blue lighted, to French Hospital.
Which, in its day, was a major nearest, a major centre for, which Southmead is now, of
yes,
course. Southmead has now taken over that as a as a major centre for neurological conditions.
Yeah.
So, major surgery, and then what?
And then, so he saved his, the neurosurgeon, who is our patron at the charity, and a very, very dear friend of mine still, saved his life that night. So, 12 hours of surgery, took it out. 5 days later, we had the biopsy that said it was the highest malignant tumour, and he had between 6 months and 18 months to live. So he went straight into radiotherapy for every day for 4 weeks.
And how was he after that surgery? Was there any consequences as a result of that surgery?
Yes, yes. He wasn't the person that I married, you know, and that's what happens with the
man,
brain.
The man you spied on the campus...
The man that I followed round the library for a year.
Still Paul, though. Still Paul.
Yeah. Oh, still Paul. And he just, he was quite shy. You know, he was very sporty, but he was quite shy. Mm. And he became quite disinhibited. So very talkative and very animated. So it was quite a different personality. Mm. But I was very lucky in the sense that he didn't become aggressive. Many brain tumours can make people aggressive.
Because it can change your personal...
Really change.
Where it is in the brain, it can change various aspects
absolutely.
Of who you are, can't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So through all of this, through and I come back to what you just said a moment ago about it's a mass on the brain, well, cut it out and we...
And we can go.
Yeah, we've got tickets this weekend.
That's and our son was 4.
So, you know, you've got a lot going on.
So...
Why would you know about what a mass on the brain or a brain tumour is until you're faced with that?
Mm.
And then, of course, you have questions, and then your questions have questions, and then those answers will lead to more questions.
Absolutely.
And that's the basis of your charity, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Is giving answers to those questions from people who've been through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that many people that work with the charity now, you know, not everybody, but many of us have had experience in our families. Mm. Of brain tumours of all varieties, so we know what that feels like, you know, because often it is, if you've walked in the shoes, you don't know how people are feeling, but you've got empathy about how they are.
Well, no two tumours are the same. Of course, no relationships are the same, or families, or the dynamics, or what those questions are, but I would imagine having a resource, and I know Paul was involved with this as well, wasn't
he? Yes, so...
The setting up of this, that having that resource that you could get answers to your questions, the obvious ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. And I think the support, he always felt, you know, when he talked to his oncologist, he would say, is there anybody else that's a footballer or a cricketer or a golfer that I can talk to that's going through the same as me? And I think it was that was the formation of the idea of bringing people together, because that's what the charity is about now. And actually, was the seed right at the beginning, which was bringing people together who have got a shared experience to be able to, you know, it's that whole thing now, peer support. Mm. But at the time, it was very disparate. And I think it was bringing those people together to talk about something which was affecting them, such as a brain tumour. So the patient was able to talk, the wife, the children, everybody who's involved in the family were able to express their own emotions and feelings about how they were dealing with what had happened to them.
Of course, Paul didn't live to see this come to the fruition that he was so involved with.
No.
But he survived 18 months.
He did survive 18 months, and that was thanks to a new chemotherapy drug that had just come out. And he took the chance, with 1 in 10 chance, that he was going to prolong his life, and he did by 6 months. So, you know, got a lot to be grateful for. And he was part of seeing this, but he would, oh my gosh, he would have no idea that it would have grown and helped so many families, which is his legacy.
Mm. It is, and a very great legacy to have, isn't it? Is that hearing mass tumour or whatever language they use today in 2023, different to perhaps the language that they used in 2001, treatment regimes are different and other forms of therapies are different, but
not that different, sadly. Yeah, and that's part of the problem, is that we're here as a support charity because we support so many families that, you know, are going through similar treatments because there has been no cure. So treatments are quite
not a great deal is really understood about the brain, is it?
No, no. So there's a lot more to be done. And whilst I obviously absolutely embody everything about research, I think it's fantastic. And, you know, we would be a charity that supports that. Our main thing is support matters and support matters now. So we're all about support for families that are thrown into this awful situation. So everything that we offer at the charity, you know, is there for the taking.
What's the most common thing you offer? Because you've been through this, and you will know, because you've joined a club of other people who've been through this, and that's the sort of the foundation of your charity. What's the most common thing you're called on for?
When somebody's diagnosed and they absolutely have nowhere to go, they don't know where to turn, they don't know who to speak to, and it's at that what we call crisis support.
Yeah.
So they phone, and then we're able to triage their phone call and put them in touch with a support professional. So the charity has many support professionals dotted around the country, and you then get somebody, and effectively somebody to hold your hand while you're...
So God forbid you hear the words that you and Paul heard. God forbid you hear those words. You contact brain tumour support, and then they will direct you to the sort of person... The expert with the skill set that can actually help you with that question.
Yeah, and they will be the person that will explain. They're not clinical, you know, because we've got some amazing clinical teams in South Mead. And so
could be practical, like how the heck am I going to pay the mortgage next month?
Exactly. And we have somebody who specialises in the welfare and benefits side, so they can assist with people who are in that situation. And then a lot of it is about talking. And somebody listening, and then signposting them to the right, you know, the right thing for them as a family. And it's tailored, you know, it's a specialist tailored support that every family is looked upon as a unique family. And we say, okay, what would be helpful for you? And then we put them in contact with the right people.
You talked about this being a legacy for Paul and for your child.
Yes, who's now 26.
So, four when this happens. What does he know of his dad?
He doesn't remember a lot because he was four when he was diagnosed and he was five when he died. He knows because I talk about him a lot. And, you know, that's something which I've always felt quite strongly about, that, you know, it is something that I think it maybe even 20 years ago, people didn't like to talk about people who died.
No.
Whereas I'm always positive and say,
does he know about the library?
Yes.
Because that's about your love, isn't it?
Yes,
that's about your love. That's about your passion. That's what brought you together. It's a great story. I love
he
it.
Would say, he'd probably say, yeah, that's mum.
That's mum. Well, maybe that there is something in all of this, Tina, that tenacity of the library. I will get noticed by this man, I fancy. I will get noticed. He has noticed me. Right, this is my man.
Yeah.
That tenacity led you to set up Brain Tumour Support.
Yeah.
So there's something about the Tina in the library behind also Brain Tumour Support, that
I've
tenacity.
I've never thought of it in that way at all, actually. So it's quite interesting that you see it in that way.
I can see it. Can see it.
Yeah.
Tenacious, passionate. Want to make something happen. Well, you have.
Want to make a difference, want to help others.
And you have.
Yes.
Brain Tumour Support. Put that into a search engine of your choice, or indeed, as you know, we're now doing on this programme, give us a call, 08000 855 949 if you want to know more, if you're not online. Tina Mitchell-Skinner, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank
what a lovely
you for
story.
Having me.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.